Jason Waller here, True Underdog Podcast and YouTube channel. Listen, make sure you subscribe today. You can go to iHeartRadio, Spotify, Apple Podcasts. You can go to our YouTube channel, True Underdog, or you can visit trueunderdog.com and subscribe to all of it.
Damn, 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 True Underdog. Damn, damn, unleash damn, the power within.
Jason Waller here, True Underdog Podcast, America's top entrepreneur podcast out there. And I've got a special guest for you. She's a blogger. She's a writer. She's an entrepreneur. She's the CIO of Impact Seat. She's a chair and founder of Do Big Things, an author of a top-selling book called Mechanical Bull. She is, listen, she's driving diversity in business right now. Let's give it up for Cheryl Conti. How are you doing, Cheryl?
Yay. I'm so happy to be here.
Oh, I got a crowd. Ready? Watch this. Yeah.
There it is.
Yeah, I had to hit the button. So how are you doing?
I'm good. I'm really happy to be here with you. I'm a big fan, as you know. And, you know, this is a really great time to talk about diversity in business because it's the future of our economy. You know, look, if you want ROI, you want DEI. End of story. All of the studies consistently show that diverse firms, instead of monoculture firms, are more innovative, they are more productive, they are more profitable. So if all you care about is making all the money, then you want to make sure you have, you know, diverse in terms of neurodiversity, you know, diverse in terms of, you know, specialties, but also diverse in terms of backgrounds and genders.
Yeah, I agree. I've got three daughters, and I think the world is getting to start to be a better place for women, even minority women. It's starting to turn the curve. It's got a lot of work to do. And I get super excited about the opportunities for them as they get older compared to what it was 15 or 20 years ago, right?
Oh, yeah. I would say, you know, in terms of the investment community and in venture capital, you know, when I was first raising, you know, for my startup Attentively, you know, even though I was, you know, an A-list blogger in the political space, even though, you know, my digital agency had generated millions of dollars of revenue, you know, it was like crawling on my belly just to get people to take my calls, you know, which was insane. You know, look, women control 85% of American consumer spending.
I thought it was more than that because I got girls in my house and they spend all my money.
I'm just saying. Your case, it might be like 95%. But yeah, I mean, when people hear that statistic, it's intuitively true, right? Like, you know, women are, you know, the engines of the family, right? And so they're the ones doing the consumer spending and ultimately making the choices. And yet only 3-4% of venture capital goes into female founders. Like that is just some 19th century old timey bull crap. Like that is just not the future that we want to live in. Again, if only the reason that it just makes intuitive sense that when you have women, you know, on your team, they're going to understand what women who are the people buying stuff are going to buy.
Well, you mentioned, you know, Attentively, the first tech startup. You were the first Black female founder to be acquired by a NASDAQ company. Talk about that experience because that's huge. It's trend setting. And we were talking about trend setting early.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, look, you know, I didn't set out to, you know, be the first, but that's how it happened. You know, Attentively, you know, it, like most businesses, it came out of, you know, seeing what our clients needed. You know, so I've been running Do Big Things for 10 years. It's a digital agency that works with leading causes, campaigns, and candidates, some corporations with mission-driven initiatives. And, you know, what we were seeing, having a foot in both the corporate tech world, you know, and in the nonprofit world, was that, you know, there was this really advanced marketing software and influencer engagement software, you know, that wasn't built or tailored to the cause's audience. And you might think, oh, well, you know, who cares about nonprofits? Let me tell you something, Jason. Nonprofits spend over $800 billion a year in products and services. So it's actually a huge sector. So we said, look, you know, we can take, you know, this amazing, you know, software that's, you know, really geared towards the corporates, you know, tailor it for, you know, the cause sector and put it at a price that they can afford. And that turned out to be, you know, a viable startup. But I'll tell you, you know, trying to get funding, you know, I literally sat in front of a VC whose whole job, his job was to find people like me, minority enterprise SaaS founders. Okay. And he looked at me and he said, well, yeah, I can see where there's a market for this. And this is cool software. Mind you, we had a prototype. We had customers. All right. It wasn't like it was vaporware or just a concept. I said, yeah, you know, this is interesting, but I don't know if you, you know, are the person who can take this, you know, all the way. Insane. Like, so stupid.
So what is that, when you hear something like that, what is that? I mean, so the listeners know, because a lot of them can relate. What does that feel like?
Oh, you know, it's devastating. It's so frustrating because it's irrational, you know, and that's what drives me crazy. You know, as someone, you know, who comes from a fairly rational standpoint in life, you know, it is just racism and sexism distort the market. They distort market forces. They are irrational. Looking at me and completely discounting all of my experience, all of my intelligence, and just saying, like, because, you know, that brain is in a package, you know, that has an afro, I can't roll with it. Even though, like, I am a guaranteed winner. I have broken records. I have consistently made history. I am award-winning. And yet, because I am in this package, people, you know, discount. Now, you know, to a certain extent, you know, as a VC, you know, our approach at the impact seat is in part, look, we know that diverse firms win. We want to invest in diverse firms, but they are, you know, from the business perspective, they're undervalued. They're undercapitalized. And so we actually get really great deals because, you know, we're often first in. So, you know, I hope that people, you know, listening are A, encouraged if you're an entrepreneur. Like, you know, I'm proof that you can make it, right? No matter what package you come in. But also, you know, if you're an investor, that you take another look at making sure you diversify your portfolio. And that includes diverse firms.
No, I love that. And you know what? You said it was frustrating, but it was also motivating. Right? It motivates you when somebody says you are not going to be able to do this because of your race or your gender or the way you look. That's motivating, I would think.
Oh, absolutely. Because it's like, look, you know, watch me work. Okay. Like, you know, you'll be sorry. And there are VCs who have told me, like, I'm sorry I didn't invest in you when I had the chance because
that's
they could have
feeling.
Been part of history. Yeah. Well, it's a good feeling, but also, again, it's frustrating because it's like, you know, the reason you didn't invest in attentively when you could made no sense. Like it was not an objective business decision. And I think that's one of the greatest weaknesses of venture capital right now is even though they say that they're, you know, using benchmarks and metrics and, you know, data driven, like, nah, it's all very much, you know, it's a very subjective process. And that's, you know, I think we need to inject, you know, a little more, you know, sense, you know, into the sector.
It's funny you say that. So I'm going through a transaction now. And you know my story. We've done a clubhouse together. And we're out there having fun with it and helping people out and empowering people and hearing their pitch. And so we hit it off. And that's why we're on the show together. But we had 15 offers for the company. And the one that I liked the most, and I'm an open book, so I'm not going to hold anything back or pretend this didn't happen. But they gave me an insulting offer. They basically told me, I know the company's worth almost $1 billion, but they were worried about me having a few million dollars being life-changing, that they wanted to, there's a waterfall. They wanted to basically pay me in increments because they were worried I'd make too much money too fast and check out, even though it was 40% of the business and I would still own 60%. It was insulting. They basically were using my education or my personality, the way I looked, maybe my age, all against me. I felt insulted. I felt like it hurt my feelings. I was fired up because I was like, I did these 6.5-hour presentations to the Goldman Sachs and the, you know, all of these big companies, Blackstone. And then this company comes out and I felt so great about them. And it's not even the offer that they made me or the amount, you know, because all that's based on EBITDA. It was really how they wanted to pay me because they thought I was going to be like first time sign a sports contract rich and I'm going to run off and do something stupid or like I'm from the trailer park and I'm going to get money and go blow all my money away. And I'm like, that's so insulting. Like the way they made me feel insulted me. So I can somewhat relate.
Yeah. And that's what it's like kind of being Black all of the time. So welcome right. to that feeling of just like, you don't see me, you know, like you can't see me, you know, because of your own projections and your own bias. And a lot of times, you know, I know that people, they don't mean to be biased, but, you know, I would say, you know, interrogate yourself, question yourself, educate yourself, because, you know, if there's anything that's come out of this pandemic, It's the knowledge that, you know, what happens in India or China or South Africa or Brazil matters to me. The health of someone in a rural village in Wuhan matters to my life, you know, and so we've all got to rise together, you know, and that means taking another look at human beings, you know, and building trust. And, you know, I do advise entrepreneurs that the people that you go into business with, like, you know, their character matters, you know, like they, especially for women, you know, it can be a challenge. You know, I've been on panels with a lot of female entrepreneurs, and one who's running, I won't name, you know, an extremely successful company told me that when, you know, she was first raising, she would get all of these questions. She's married. She would get all these questions about, oh, you know, how are you going to manage work-life balance, right? How's that going to work for you? And, you know, one day she was washing dishes and she just forgot to put her wedding ring on, you know, ran out to an investor meeting and that question didn't come up. And so then she was faced with the choice of, I'm proud of my husband, you know, I'm proud of my marriage, but I just want to take this question off the table. It's not relevant. And when I tell my guy friends that, who are entrepreneurs, are like, no one ever asks me about work-life balance. I wear my wedding ring and no one ever asks me about that. So like, that's crazy. Really think through, like, what are you saying? Because as you said, like, they lost a good deal, you know, in an amazing company, an amazing founder, you know, because they were making all of these assumptions about you based on nothing.
Yeah. Well, they're back at the table now eating their words, trying to figure it out. Like, they apologize and I forgive and move on. And they want to put another offer in and we'll see. It's just, they're going to have to crawl out of the hole. But what you said about life and balance, you know, that touches a lot too. I agree. I think there's still a stereotype that thinks if a woman is married or has kids, they're worried about her work. I agree with you. And I think that's wrong. My daughter's 22. She just gave birth to our second grandchild. And she has the best fiance in the world, but she calls him her Manny because she's going back to work and he takes care of the kids. But that should be the world we live in where nobody can say, oh, it's a woman's job or it's a man's job. Like, that kind of nonsense has to stop as well. You gave a good point.
Yeah, well, and look, it's the number of women, I don't have the statistic in my head, but the number of women who are the breadwinners now is pretty high. I mean, it's, you know, at least in the United States, you know, it's at least, I think, 40%. And yet, you know, there's what's called the second shift for women. So, you know, you go out, you're the boss, you're doing the hashtag girl boss thing, and then you come home and you got a whole load of dishes, you got a load of laundry, you know, somebody's got to get fed. You know, I do think that there is an opportunity for men to step up and be supportive because, again, you're an economic unit together, right? Like, if your partner is the person who's going to ultimately bring the most wealth home, it's in your interest to make sure, you know, she's rested, she's got what she needs to be on fire the next day. You know, it's a partnership. But, you know, I'll tell you, you know, one of the things I used to say, you know, I've had business partners, great business partners in the past. It's like a marriage. You've probably experienced that too. It's, you know, you are financially tied together. You are emotionally very linked. You know, business is not, you know, business is very much about feelings and emotions and intuition. And you've got to, you know, if you have partners, you really do have to also, you know, make sure that you're balancing, you know, the load of who's doing what and, you know, is everybody contributing at the same amount? And is there that trust and respect?
So I was in a clubhouse and I heard something come up from Grant Cardone, who I just had on the show the other day, and he's fantastic. But he brought something up. They were talking about how many females does he have on his executive team and his properties? And he said, none. And they said, why? He said, well, for every 100 applicants I get on males, I get one or two females. So I try to get the best ones to apply. And he said, and I've heard this before, I think Heather Monahan mentioned this, a lot of women, they're going to be really accurate and very truth finding when they apply for a job. Like, oh, I don't know if I'm qualified for that. Where men will kind of hide from that and just try to wing it and not be as prepared and maybe have some BS in their resume to show up. Therefore, they apply for jobs that maybe they shouldn't get and sometimes they get. Do you think that's a fair assessment?
oh, it's actually a really big problem, particularly in the venture capital arena, where, you know, as an investor, you know, I see, a lot of pitches where, especially a female investor, they tend to be very conservative, very realistic of like, okay, you know, if we get this amount invested and we, you know, do these things and, you know, make these changes, you know, we're going to be here in 5 years. I regularly, probably once a week, have to tell someone, I need you to 10x these numbers. Here's why. Because male entrepreneurs very much like blow up their numbers, make it big. Investors are used to discounting in their head. They immediately look at those numbers and be like, yeah, man, okay, I'm gonna cut that in half. Like, because I know you're not gonna do that. And so if you're a woman, you know, you're entering the space, if they're gonna cut your conservative investments in half, they're going to throw you out of the room, you know, and not see the potential of your business. And so that's a really big challenge. But yeah, pipeline is a really big issue. You know, it's a big issue for entrepreneurs because a lot of people don't necessarily see themselves as being in that role. You know, it's risky, especially if you're a minority or you're a woman, you know, you get a lot more scrutiny. You know, and so if people are afraid to fail because they wonder, well, what's going to happen if I fail? Which, you know, what I try to encourage people to think about is, look, you can fail up, you know, just like the white guys. Okay. Like even if 90% of American small businesses fail in their first year. Okay. So you're probably going to fail, but that doesn't diminish you. Any savvy executive is going to look at your resume and say, ah, here's someone with ambition. They've got drive. They've been making decisions as an executive level, you know, and they dare to dream. You know, they've got vision. You are now qualified for a much higher executive position inside a larger company than you were before you started that startup, even though it failed, because startups fail for all kinds of reasons. It's usually not because, you know, you're hardworking and you're an amazing person. There's so many environmental factors, market factors, supply chain issues. And, you know, again, any savvy executive is going to understand that.
Yeah, I think the fear of rejection for minorities and for females is real. And therefore, they don't apply for jobs they could have and should have got sometimes. And you're right, in the venture capital world, they do discount everything. So I see a lot of females who are really accurate, where men are very loose and bragging a little bit and boosting their numbers. It is an issue, absolutely. And I would say for listeners out there, don't be scared to fail. It's okay. And don't be scared to apply for that job or be scared to open a business, whether whatever race you are or whatever gender you are, you have every opportunity, but you have to take it. You can't be scared to sit in front of people and own that moment, because the problem is everybody's being held back. And because of that fear, they stay back rather than break that fear and go, let me get in front of people and do this now. Right?
Oh, absolutely. You know, so men will look at a job description, and even though they only meet like half of the qualifications, they'll toss their hat in the ring. You know, women will look at that same list and be like, oh, I only meet 70 or 75%. I guess I'm not qualified. Look, if you're half qualified, they're looking for you. You know, they want you. Go ahead. You know, go for the gold. What have you got to lose? It's just an email. It's just an application. Why not go for that brass ring? Reach for that next level.
I hope somebody heard that, and I hope that's what they do, because you're right. There's too much of that. If it's you're 50% qualified, get in there and have the conversation. There is no reason to lose it to somebody else, because you can go out there and shine and pitch yourself, which I love when people pitch themselves. Let's talk about your book, Mechanical Bull, How You Can Achieve Startup Success. I wrote a book. I'm still working on it. I'm almost done. But what was the passion behind your book and sharing your amazing journey in the world?
Well, I bet your book is going to be dope, and I can't wait to read it. So let me know when it's out. But yeah, you know, I wrote the book, you know, after, you know, I sold the company Attentively. And here's a story. We sold the company in July 2016. My son Colm was born in August 2016. So, you know, doing M&A and being super pregnant is like a whole other story. But, you know, I like to joke that, you know, he's my new startup. You know, it's like a 18 to 20 year runway. I'm not sure I have an exit strategy. If anybody's got one, let me know. But, you know, after that, you know, after, you know, the dust settled from producing a baby out of my body, you know, a friend of mine sat me down at lunch and said, look, Cheryl, more people have been to the moon than have done what you have done in American society. 17 people have been to the moon. Okay. One Black woman has gotten all the way through the M&A process to a successful exit to the NASDAQ, and you have an obligation to make sure you are pulling up other people behind you. And so, you know, I really took that in, and, you know, that mechanical bull, how you can achieve startup success, really came out of that. I mean, I wrote the book that I wish that I'd had when I was starting. And so I tried to make it entertaining. There's a lot of really dumb jokes in there, but it's also jam packed with like real talk. Like, how do you do it? And it goes through all of the life cycle of a business, from like, you've got a great idea, you know, how do you build a team? You know, how do you get funding, traction, burn, all the way through exit? You know, and every chapter has at the end a speed bump, right? Like, okay, you know, because the book is for anybody, you know, like it's a mechanical bull no matter, you know, who you are, you know, white, Asian, Black, Latino, like it's hard. But, you know, if you are a woman or a minority, or God help you both, the speed bump at the end of every chapter is designed to say, okay, here's the thing that you're going to experience maybe at this, and here's how I got through it. Or here's how, you know, the book also has a whole bunch of other entrepreneurs and investors who share their stories. So, you know, that was the genesis of the book. And, you know, the book has really found, you know, its audience. It was a number one bestseller when it launched a few years ago, and in a bunch of different categories. I'm actually now doing the audiobook. Don't make the mistake I made, Jason. Make sure you launch your book with an audiobook, because I would say at least once a week, somebody's like, why doesn't your book have an audio? And I'm like, I didn't have the money at the time, but now I do.
I dedicated like 4 or 5 days to do mine. So I do all our TV commercials and radio commercials. So I'll be okay reading my book and what I wrote. But what I love what you just said that's important is everybody has their things, right? You're female and you're a minority. It's like, oh geez, that you got the double whammy against you. And you did something that what they mentioned to you is 17 people went to the moon. When I won that Entrepreneur of the Year award, I got it back there. I didn't go to finish high school. I didn't go to college. I was one of their first that never went to college that won the award. They're like, it's your duty to, for those people that didn't go to college, for those people that didn't have much, to do something. So us giving back, like what you did with your book and what I'm trying to do with mine, is important, because it brings people up that can relate to what your experiences are. Nobody's going to have your exact same life, but it's going to be relatable of what they're going through. And they're going to be able to get those bumps you mentioned in those chapters to really help them. And if you had that book, it would have been a game changer if you had that same book when you were younger. Same thing with mine. Mine is similar to that, in overcoming some things and overcoming challenges. And, you know, I talk about in there, you know, scared money don't make money, and, you know, intimidation and love your haters, and, you know, things for people to really try to relate to that are like me, you know, that feel less than in different ways, or haven't been accepted because I had a kid in my teens. We've all kind of got some stuff. And it's so important that we're giving back like you are. And it's just fantastic.
No, and you know, the fact that you're out here, you know, being honest, a lot of entrepreneurs wouldn't be honest about the fact that they only have a high school education. That is so major. You know, like there's so much emphasis put on credentials that it creates a barrier, you know, for people who have amazing game-changing ideas, but they feel like, you know, because, you know, I'm going to be, you know, they're intimidated. I'm going to be in a room with all, you know, like some guy who, you know, or gal who went to Harvard, you know, and has an MBA and like is going to talk down to me and, you know, isn't going to get me or feel me, you know, like I don't belong there, you know. And, you know, if we're going to break down the barriers to success, you know, and wealth, you know, that means we have to also break down the barriers in people's minds. Because I'll tell you what, just back to diversity, you know, we have to have a diversity of ideas coming from different parts of society, because, you know, different people understand the different problems and different solutions, you know, and that's how we create game-changing apps, you know, and groundbreaking products and services, is by bringing the richness of people's experience. I see this problem and I know how to solve it.
Exactly. And you kind of mentioned it here. Let's talk about something a lot of people in business dread, but I love it. It's failure, right? Why should we embrace failure despite everything that's thrown at us to take the easy way in life?
We have to embrace failure. Everybody fails. You know, my son is very much, as a 4-year-old and always, even as a 2-year-old, he's a perfectionist, you know, and he's always looking, and, you know, one of the
big things. No way. Your son's a perfectionist? Come on.
Oh boy, my son is a total mutant. The county government recently gave me a 30-page report on that little mutant. Okay, like I'm in big trouble. but you know, I show him all the time because I know he's kind of a perfectionist just by nature. You know, oops, you know, I spilled something. Mama made a mistake. And that's okay. It's okay to make a mistake. It's okay to fail because you learn from your failures. And, you know, again, you've got to fail up. You say, oh, okay, well, this didn't work. Let me try another solution. Yeah, especially for startups, what I always advise, you know, for entrepreneurs is to decide. You've got to make rapid decisions because every day you don't make a decision is a day you're burning money. You know, but reevaluate, you know, give it 6 to 12 weeks. Look back at the numbers, look back at how it feels, and then make another decision. You know, like you may have not made a decision, but you can measure and tweak and say, okay, that didn't quite work. It didn't quite get the results. That's okay. You know, now I know, you know, let me try this a different way. That's what learning from failure is all about.
I agree. What about, let's talk a little bit, let's loosen up here, Clubhouse. We remember our pitches on Clubhouse for Elizabeth. Do you remember what we had you pitch? I'm trying to remember because hopefully you remember what I pitched.
You pitched like bread, I think, and a bottle of water.
And a hamburger. Crazy. Yeah.
A hamburger. That's right.
A hamburger. Yeah. And we had you pitch something. What was it? Because it was solid.
Well, I pitched my business, you know, I think I might've pitched like candy or something like that. Like something, I think it was something to eat also. But yeah, you know, oh, okay.
Let's hear you pitch your business.
Oh,
you good with that?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I can do a super quick pitch for Do Big Things.
Yeah. All right. Perfect.
You ready?
Yes.
Okay. Do Big Things. We are an award-winning, record-breaking digital agency that specializes in helping the world's leading nonprofits, foundations, and corporations and candidates with the new narrative and new tech for the new era that they need today. We're full service. Anything you need in terms of digital ads, strategy, technology, we got it. You know, we are woman-owned, woman-led, and 50% people of color. And that's because we want to create the messaging that's actually going to impact what the clients are trying to reach, those target audiences. You can find us at dobigthings.today.
Bam! We got claps going. Yeah, we got music playing. That was really good. That's a great pitch. We're going to have to hit you up and see if you guys can do anything for us. Do you guys do any lead gen? We spend a lot of money on lead gen on social. We'll have to look at that. We're always adding more companies and enrolling, but I think it's so cool. You said 50% of your employees are of color. That is awesome. And then you said it's women owned and women led. So
women owned and women
that's
led.
Also awesome. I've had so much fun with you. Where can people find you, Cheryl?
Well, you know, if you're looking for help on digital services, www.dobigthings.today. If you are a venture capitalist and you want to talk more about the amazing deal flow of incredible, innovative companies, you can find me at the Impact Seat, impactseat.com.
Awesome. And we'll have all the links on there so much. Thank you. Thank you so much, Cheryl, for your time. That's a wrap here on True Underdog. Bam.
And that concludes another episode here on True Underdog. If you're interested in hearing more, make sure you subscribe at iHeartRadio, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or the YouTube channel. You can always visit trueunderdog.com, subscribe to all of them. Make sure you check out our newest episodes coming out on Mondays and Thursdays. True Underdog, baby.
Bam! True Underdog. Bam! Unleash the power.